Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to Pacific Town Sound Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm James.
And I'm Travis.
And we are live on the day of the official Save On Radio launch party, February 11th, 2018. This has been a long time in the making. We are all very excited for the night ahead. When our producer, Jaden, and I connected with Save On Meat's owner, Mark Brand, way back in the summer of last year, we didn't quite know what to expect from this crazy idea, but we're all so glad that we stuck around for the ride. We can't wait to see what this inaugural year entails for Pacific Sound Radio and for Save On Radio. Special thanks to Glenn Alderson, Travis Dean, Mike Shaflick, Ash McLeod, the Save On Meat staff team, and all the other hosts on the Save On Radio network.
Yeah, super special thanks to Dennis, who just helped us with the audio program.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a glitch up at the beginning of the show, but the course has been corrected. Mm-hmm. We're ready to go.
All right. On this episode, we're going to be doing our first ever Pacific Sound Profile, where we interview a local individual who contributes to the music scene outside of performing. Today we'll be talking to Ray
Machen.
Who's a photographer who has shot many touring and local acts for Beatroot magazine and the Permanent Rain Press.
So we're going to skip our first single just because we had a little bit of a delay starting. So we're going to jump right into the news. So okay. I'm gonna start. So our first news story is that the Juno Award nominees for 2018 have been announced.
Woo!
Taking place in Vancouver this year, which is very exciting. BC representation in terms of the nominees hasn't been as strong as we would like, with the exception of the Metal and Hard Music Album category, which features two nominees, Ancients for Voice of the Void and Arch Spire for Relentless Mutation, and the Instrumental Album category for Five Alarm Funk's latest record, Sweat. Burnaby's own Michael Bublé is the host and is nominated for Adult Contemporary Album of the Year and Album of the Year for Nobody But Me. Some of our favorite albums and artists from our 2017 wrap-up episode, which you can find on our website and our YouTube channel, have been nominated. Always has been nominated for Group of the Year, Alternative Album of the Year for Antisocialites. Death from Above has been nominated for Rock Album of the Year for Outrageous Now. And Daniel Caesar has been nominated for R&B Soul Recording of the Year for Freudian. The award ceremony takes place March 24th at Rogers Arena. Expect more Juno's coverage from us in the coming weeks. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.
You going to go to it?
Maybe.
Maybe? If tickets are...
Depends on the price of tickets.
If it doesn't sell out, and then you have to buy it for like $80 more on StubHub. Okay, so yeah. Next news story. Director Kevin Smith says he'll do whatever he can to save East Vancouver's Rio Theatre. We learned about this from a Global News post by John S. Peary. And more follow-up on our ongoing coverage about the Rio Theatre. Director Kevin Smith tweeted his support for the theatre, expressing interest in hosting a benefit screening. If you don't know Kevin Smith, he's directed a bunch of really cool movies, Clerks, Chasing Amy, Dogma, and Jay and Silent Bob movies. VFS alumni, and says he'll do anything he can to keep the Rio open, even if it means he has to hold the doors open with his large body.
And this ties into, again, more follow-up on the Rio Theater. Good news is that the operator has said that its bid for the property has been accepted. This is from a Georgia Strait web post by Charlie Smith. So on February 7th, Rio announced via Twitter that their bid for the property had been accepted. The theater still has to raise a lot of money in a matter of weeks to close the deal. So the operators have won a small victory, but the Rio needs their support now more than ever. So stay tuned for more coverage on that, because we will definitely be updating as more news comes out.
All right. Migos and Tory Lanez are going to be headlining the Breakout Festival. The follow-up on another story from last week. The Breakout Festival, Vancouver's first ever two-day rap hip-hop festival, revealed their lineup this past Monday. Artists on the bill include Migos, Tory Lanez...
Six Lack? Yeah, I'm going to say Six Lack.
Lil Pump, A Boogie with the Hoodie, and many more. Tickets are on sale now at the Breakout Festival website. It should be...
Crunktacular?
Crunktacular.
Yeah, that's the phrase I'd use. And more festival news. So Westward Music Festival returns to Vancouver with a Next Level lineup for 2018. This is taken from a Beatroot Magazine web post by Lauren Donnelly. Westward Festival is back September 13th to 16th with a diverse lineup of artists that truly is something for everyone. So some of the bigger international names include R&B electronic artist Blood Orange, indie folk singer-songwriter Angel Olsen, R&B chanteuse Kalia, and the godfathers of grunge, Seattle's one and only Mudhoney. Canadian bands on the bill include Edmonton's Nihiyawak, I hope I pronounced that right, Montreal duo Milk and Bone, and the Ontario noise punk band Mets. Local talent on the bill includes Odds and We Are the City. So this is, for those who aren't familiar with Westward Music Festival and how it's functioned in the past, it's a multi-venue festival going on throughout the city, including the Vogue, the Orpheum, the Biltmore Cabaret, Fox Cabaret, Rickshaw Theater Venue, Rio Theater, and the Fortune Sound Club. So music fans, people who are interested in the festival, have the option to buy a pass for all 3 days that covers admission for all these wonderful shows, or you can choose which show that you want to attend and just pay the coverage for that individual show. So pre-sale is already underway at westwardfest.com, and the tickets will go open for the general public very shortly.
It kind of works like the Vancouver Film Festival in that way, right? You can buy a ticket to a movie, or you can see all the movies.
Or you can, buy the festival pass, as it were.
Yeah. All right, so up next, we got some concert listings. February 13th, Single and Angry this Valentine's Day. Get your mosh on at 333 with Slumlord Feeding, Shallow End, and Bog.
On February 16th, got a number of different shows going on. Local metal heavyweights Witch Doctor and Baptists open for All Pigs Must Die at the Astoria.
Ben Rogers and the Blood Red Yonder and Real Ponchos play at the Cobalt.
The Segways, the Escapes, Gabe and the Oyaz, and the Stephen Ford Group play the Railway Stage.
Black Wizard and their Livin' Oblivion release show with Mean Jeans, Dead Quiet, Wayne Grow, and Killer Deal at the Rickshaw.
It's a really, really solid lineup. On February 17th, Ponytails, Andrew Filan, and Pleasure Blimps play the Cobalt.
And then you got the Followays, Mitigo, Harborside, and Bear King playing at the Railway Stage.
All right. So we are going to play our headliner single for this episode. Our first single, well, first and only single, is the latest release from one of the best psychedelic rock bands in the city, The Orange Kite. Their debut record, last year's Grow Right, was one of my, James speaking, favorite local releases, and this new song promises more hazy, pulsating, kaleidoscopic bliss from Stevie Moonboots and Company. This is the lead single off their next record, The Orange Kite Says Yes, due out next month. This is Goats.
Yeah.
All right, and that was Goats by The Orange Kite, their new single from their next record called The Orange Kite Says Yes, due out next month. Next, we'd like to introduce you to our first installment of Pacific Sound Profile. This is a segment featuring individuals that don't typically take the stage in the local music scene, but are a huge part of, you know, what keeps the local music scene alive and kicking. And today is our first Pacific Sound Profile installment. We'd like to introduce you to Ray Machen.
Hey there, how you doing, James?
Hey, Ray.
I like your Sloan shirt.
Oh, thank you, buddy. Yeah, I think it's very subtle.
Yeah. No,
for those who are listening in, it's...
For the home listener.
Yeah, for the home listener, on my shirt I've got a panther with the Junior Panthers on the front, and then it's Sloan with the number 20 on the back.
Is that the school they all went to or something? Or?
Well, no, Junior Panthers is the song off of One Chord to Another.
Oh, that's how much I know about that.
And I saw them at the 20th anniversary show for that album.
Nice.
Would you like to compliment me, too?
I like you're very dressed up. You look very professional.
So professional.
Other than... James's Sloan shirt, you're blowing him out of the water.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this. Welcome to the Pacific Sound Radio Fashion Hour.
Yeah. Do me now.
Yeah. Nice Matt shirt.
Yeah, thanks.
I was pointing at it when we were talking about Matt's during the Westward Fest.
I'm glad
section.
You mentioned that. They're coming for the Wayward Festival or whatever. The Westward Festival.
Is it West? I'm fairly sure it's Westward.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, unless we've been mispronouncing it. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, and
they'll make fun of us on Twitter.
When you were doing your Juno, I think they're nominated as well for a Juno.
Matt's?
Yeah.
I didn't see it, but I might be wrong.
Yeah.
So, Ray is a live music photographer who has shot a number of shows across the city at a variety of venues for bands and artists of all sizes, and over the past few years, Ray has contributed photography to Beatroot Magazine and the Permanent Rain Press. So, I know that was a little abrupt, but, you know. Just keeping it going along.
Oh, yeah.
How did you get into photography, specifically music photography?
Oh, well, I've liked music for a long time, but then I also started to like photography, and eventually I wanted to combine the two type of, you know, practices, and just started bringing my camera to little shows. And then once I built up a portfolio, I sent that into, like, any music blog I could find, and eventually made friends, and they pointed me to other music blogs, and the one I've been with the longest is the Permanent Rain Press, and they've allowed me access to a lot of really great shows. I'm forever grateful to Chloe and Natalie Hoy of the Permanent Rain Press.
All right, so just what is the Permanent Rain Press then?
They're,
for anyone who doesn't know, like me.
They, like, for what I do with them, it's like a music blog, but they're kind of like anything goes in the Vancouver local scene of whatever's happening. Like, say the Junos is going to be a really big thing, like food and culture. They're going to want, like, reviewers and stuff like that to go and, like, taste stuff or watch movies and things like that. But they've done a lot of red carpet things like that.
Cool.
And,
cool.
Yeah, music primarily, though. Yeah.
Nice.
So what was the first show you ever shot, and what was your experience like?
Oh, wow. First show.
A long time ago.
Yeah. It was probably, honestly,
basement far, far away.
Yeah, it was honestly probably something at, like, the Cobalt or the Biltmore or Electric Owl that's no longer around. And it was, like, some local band that I don't even remember anymore, because those are the only people that would let me into, like, a show with my camera, is people that wanted exposure and stuff. And it's great. Some people were like, oh, this is so awesome. Someone's taking a picture of us. And sometimes I'd go up to them and be like, hey, I took pictures of you. It's like, oh, yeah, thanks. Maybe come by the next show or something. But, yeah, honestly, I don't remember the names. I remember one of the first that I shot to use as a portfolio was Speedy Ortiz at the Cobalt. Lots of Cobalt shows. I'd have to get my ticket stubs. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what's your favorite show you shot then?
Favorite show is definitely a recent one. Was a Queens of the Stone Age show at the Save on Foods Memorial Center in Victoria. They were very photogenic, and they've been one of my favorite bands forever, so that was really cool to get to shoot them, and luckily I wasn't harmed in any way, so,
yeah.
Was, because we were both at the next show they played on that tour, which is at Pacific Coliseum. Gotta ask, was Josh more or less drunk at the Vancouver show than the Victoria show?
I want to say he was less, because he played longer, and he was more on the ball. Like, I think, I don't know, in Victoria he's getting pretty loosey-goosey, I think, because there was less of an audience, but I think Vancouver, he knew he had to have his shit together, so Yeah. Sorry, Josh, if you're listening, being a little critical.
I hope he's listening.
Yeah.
Even if he's angry, I'd hope he'd
yeah,
be listening.
Yeah, angry email from Josh. Yeah.
Josh, you can tweet at us at no. Pacific Crest Radio.
You'll be hearing from my life.
Yeah, it's like, I will get that, I will put that that email, and I will frame it.
Yeah.
So, how long have you been shooting shows for Beetroot and Permanent Rain Press?
Permanent Rain is like just over 2 years or something, and they have a policy where they want something at least once a month. So that was like my quota, at least once a month I'd be shooting something. But on busy months where there's a lot that I think is cool, I'll put in tons of requests. And I'm not even the highest requester. I think there's a girl that requests like 20 shows in a month or something.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. But, no, it's pretty awesome. You kind of, the way at least the Permanent Rain works is you see a show coming up and you put your name on the list and they'll try to get you in. It's not exactly like, oh, we want a specific band and you have no choice but to shoot it. But it's really as a photographer, we have a lot of choice, a lot of say, which is great. Mm-hmm. They do a good job.
That's good. What equipment are you currently using?
It's an ancient one. Still checks out though. It's a 5D Mark II from Canon, and I got like a couple of the standard lenses for concerts, the 24-70 and a 70-200, both 2.8 f-stop. I don't know if this means anything to you guys. any camera nerds out there, I'm hoping you appreciate that, but yeah. That's what I use.
Sounds fancy.
Yeah, they're,
I mean,
get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, improvement over a smartphone.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, do you find
they're
that?
They're getting there. Though.
I mean, the iPhones are pretty good today.
Yeah,
I was just going to say,
be putting me out of business.
Do you find that might be a source of competition?
I saw one time. I don't know if it's real or fake, but they had an iPhone with the miniature camera lens attached to the little camera in the phone, and I'm like, okay, well, if this is the future, I'm going to be pretty toast pretty soon. So, but no. You can't get a better shot than with a camera. Sorry.
So what are some of the challenges that you face that are unique to live photography as opposed to other types of photography, or just, you know, going through the process of trying to get onto shows and covering the shows and dealing with security and guest lists and stuff like that?
So, like, other than being kicked, right?
Yes, other than being kicked
okay.
in the face.
Yeah, okay.
Have you been kicked in the face?
Almost. Josh really swung at me that one concert, yeah. But his feet failed him. Anyway. Yes. There's not a lot of danger in my industry. There's some confusions. Like, you get to the door and they're like, I don't see your name anywhere, buddy. Take a hike. Stuff like that. And then you got to call publications and be like, what's going on? And then some security with a superiority complex will tell you where they want to see you shoot, and you know, if they don't like the way you're doing it or something like that, they'll pull you out. But normally, it's fine. Like, everyone knows what's going on, but those are the few things that can go wrong. Yeah, mostly not getting in on time when you need to be in the pit, because you only get 3 songs. Yeah.
And those are for the bigger shows.
Yes, though, like bigger shows.
For the smaller shows, you're usually allowed to stick around for the whole time?
Yeah, like Cobalt or Biltmore, you just do whatever you want usually, but yeah.
Cool. So, I guess what's the best advice that you can give someone who's just beginning to shoot concerts?
Well, it feels like I'm still just beginning, but I think if you really want to get into concert photography, you definitely need a portfolio. So talk to friends and bands and take pictures of them. Eventually you can submit your portfolio to a bigger honcho, you know? So yeah, build that portfolio. Just keep taking pictures. And it's not a very profitable business, but if you really enjoy it and you like free music and concerts and combined with photography, then just keep doing it. Keep taking pictures and get your name out there.
And what was the last show that you shot?
That was Dan Auerbach last night at the Vogue Theater.
And how was that? Dan Auerbach, for those who don't know, most well known as the vocalist and guitarist for the Black Keys.
Yeah, I'm sorry, distracted by that right there. But,
it's okay. It's got all
great.
Sorts
it
of people.
Yeah. It is amazing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. For the homeless.
The faux hawk walk by.
Can we get, do you have like a blog that you post? Like, okay. Anyway.
Oh, we can plug ourselves all
You're
day long.
You're the photographers. Yeah. So you let us know.
We're plugging you. Oh, yeah. That sound came out wrong. Whoa.
Whatever floats your boat.
So how was the Dan Auerbach show?
Yeah, anyway, Dan Auerbach, right. He was good. Like I was telling you earlier, he has got like a lot of southern twangy influence that doesn't sound like Gold on the Ceiling or Little Black Submarines at all. He's really playing from the heart, I feel, like stuff that he knows isn't as catchy or profitable, but he's really a musician of his trade. He's doing a great job. I don't know if you'd ever play a song by him to, like, I can't justify it, but he looked at, like he was having a great time, but there was a woman there that really, really wanted him to play some Black Keys and was screaming at him throughout the set, and I think she really likes him, but yeah, the show was great. I got some good shots, and hopefully they'll be up pretty soon. Yeah,
that's awesome. Are there any other local photographers that you see at the same shows that you've connected with? Like, do you find that the live photography space is fairly competitive, or is it friendly? What's it like here?
Initially, like, when I didn't know anyone and I was just starting, and I got this big bad media pass, it was this backstage VIP access thing. I was like, wow, this is super awesome. But then you get there with the other photographers, and they've all been there for a long time, and they're all in their little circle, right? And I definitely see a bunch of them, but it definitely took me a while to, you know, engage with them and meet them more and more at more and more shows and become friends with some of them. But there are definitely a lot of us around, and I see them around a lot. As far as, like, camaraderie or anything like that, people are really good. No one really hogs the best spots. We're all walking around, tapping each other on the shoulder, ducking under each other's lenses, and I think it's good. I've rarely experienced like an asshole photographer. Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah.
So, what are your goal? Some of your goals going forward as a photographer?
As a photographer, I don't know. It's not even like my primary thing, like career wise or whatever. I like taking the photos, and it's cool when people see them and comment and say nice things about them. Basically, so. I don't know. I want, personally, away from concert photography, I'd like to take more road trips and get more of those landscape shots in and nature and all that stuff. But, yeah, just improve myself and share that with as many people as I can.
All noble, yeah. Noble yeah. Steps. This is a question that actually just sprung to mind. In terms of, you know, all sorts of shows that you've seen, all sorts of sizes of bands of, you know, different longevity and careers and blah, blah, blah. What bands do you find are the most fun to shoot? Like, is there anything that a person in a band can do to make themselves more photogenic on stage?
Yeah, there's definitely some genres that you're like, okay, I'm expecting more. Like, a bigger hip-hop R&B artist is usually going to be a lot of performing part of the performer, not just the music. I like a lot of boring music, so a lot of them just stand there just with their guitars, and they play, and I make them look as nice as possible, but that's a lot of my shots. But occasionally you'll get, like, the metal show, a rapper or something. It'd be very charismatic, something that you want to see. It's like jumping up and down, and a lot of smiling's good. Engaging with the audience instead of just looking down at your instruments always, like, makes for a good shot, which is why Dan did a good job last night, I thought. Other than that, just doing stuff with your hands, or just anywhere where you're away from the mic, so it's not doesn't look like you're eating it, is great for a photograph. So yeah.
Yeah. So is there anyone involved in the music scene that you'd recommend we bring on? Any local artists?
I know you guys were just you're just playing the Orange Kite. Have you guys had them on before?
Not yet.
Yeah, I think they'd be great to interview it.
Off the air, you were saying that they've played at your house.
Yeah, they've definitely come over, because one of my friends my roommate's super into the psych rock scene, and obviously picked up on these guys, and it's great because they're local. He's befriended them. They've come by the house sometimes. I'm not sure if they've actually played the house. I have been away if it happened, but they're definitely supposed to. And we got this nice little music space where they can come by, so... if anyone wants to, you guys just we'll pay you in beer and, you know, nice comments, and you guys can play the space, and could even have a radio show over sometime, maybe, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a remote recording thing.
Yeah. Apparently, Mac DeMarco played a show in our place, but
really?
I don't know how much truth there is to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It must have been like super early in his career because. He's from here, right?
Yeah.
I should know this.
Yeah, I think he's from here and then he moved away because of the music scene here.
Yeah.
Which is what we're trying to resolve or improve at the very least.
Right.
Right.
We'll go with this goal of this show. How can anyone? I guess kind of building off this question, is there anyone, any other photographers, any other like music folks that you know, not just artists, but other music folks that you know that you'd recommend we bring on, just get their perspective.
Music folks, as in not just performers,
not just performers. Okay. Yeah.
As far as the psych scene, there's more to it than just the music. There's this whole culture of like the light show and. My buddy who I ended up living with now, he knew this really cool guy that was doing the light show for Desert Days or something, and they do oil, they drip it on a projector and they do all this crazy stuff, and now he's into it too, so that's something like, I don't know, you guys could check out where, the lighting of it, because it's so important to a photographer like myself to actually have a well lit and really interesting looking backdrop. But other bands, I know the Magic Circle played our place. They're pretty cool. You've heard of them, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they actually recently changed their name to the Resurrection Committee.
Oh, yes. Okay. I've heard about that, yeah. But as far as, I don't know. There's just so many people that I don't even, can't even think of right off the bat, names that just do so much for the industry that are really important. But, yeah, I'm blanking right now. Sorry.
That's okay. I'll send you a text later. We'll figure that
out. Yeah, absolutely.
So how can people follow you and view your work?
Oh, plug. Very cool. Awesome.
Those plugs we were talking about.
I just got Instagram because I'm just an idiot for not Instagram as a photographer, but it's Ray Machin Photo. If you can't spell it, it's probably not worth it anyway.
M-A-I-C-H-I-N.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks.
Yeah.
James. Awesome. And I got the same thing, Ray Machin Photography on Facebook, and you'll see a lot of my work on the Permanent Rain Press as well. And, occasionally for Beetroot and hopefully more. Cause like I said, I'm still budding myself. I need to get out there. So
yeah, I want to see you at the next Beetroot meeting.
Yeah. Okay. At least for the beer, I'll be there for sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been really nice talking to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being on the
thanks
show.
Thanks for having me. You guys are great.
No, you're great.
Oh. No, you are.
You.
No, you hang up.
So we said we were only going to play one headliner single, but I think we have some time to play another headliner sequel. Or single. I was saying sequel.
Which
single.
Which
we're
going to
play Actors.
Actors?
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
Shot them too.
Okay, so we are our next headliner.
Is this
single?
This is the one I'm playing right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, well, just let me do the intro.
You can
jump in the gun a little bit. Jeez. Okay, so this is the latest single from Actors from their next album, which is coming out on Artifact Records March 9th. This is Slaves.
was the latest single from Actors called Slaves. So our featured guest on this episode is Plus Guests. Plus Guests are a three-piece band that blend synth-pop, punk, and indie rock into an energetic and fun identity all their own. We're going to kick things off with a studio recording of their song External Validation off their first record, Wants Your Love.
We don't need your son!
That was External Validation. I guess we'll start off. I want to do a round of introductions from everybody, so just say your name and what you play in the band.
Hey, I'm Matt. I play the baritone guitar. I call it a bass guitar.
I'm Jen, and I play the drums, and sometimes guitar, but not very well.
And I'm Eric, and I play the synth, and I sometimes drum.
Better than me.
Fantastic.
But no one can play guitar as good as I can.
You don't know that.
So humble. I guess before we launch into everything, I wanted to tell like a quick funny story about before we were bringing you guys on the show. So when Travis and Jane were saying, "Oh, our next guests are Plus Guests," I was like, "Yeah, and yeah, okay, I know it's a guest-driven show. Plus Guests. It's like an Abbott and Costello routine."
Yes. No, our next guests are Plus Guests. You thought it was like a placeholder name?
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it was a placeholder name slash. You guys were just like fucking with me. So
yeah. That's our goal, actually, yeah. Just to constantly bewilder and confuse.
To be
everyone.
Fair, we're usually fucking with James at least a little,
just a tad.
Yeah. Cool. Well, plus, like, the good thing about our name is that we're on, like, most posters in town.
So oh, yeah, so we played everywhere.
Yeah, we've played everywhere.
Rogers Arena, Commodore.
It's always, like, say, Franz Ferdinand plus Guests,
yeah.
You know, or, you know, Metallica plus Guests. Yeah, you know? We played all the major shows.
Yeah, we even played Richards and Richards, like, before it, you know, died.
Absolutely. Oh. Yeah.
So what's behind that song that we just played, External Validation, what's the story with that one? The lyrics are pretty hilarious, for one.
Thank you.
That was the first song that I ever wrote when I met Matt and Jen. I met Matt and Jen through an old partner of mine, and then I just went over to Matt's, and Matt was like, "Hey, well, I need someone who has a microcorder. I'm trying to buy one." I was like, "Well, I have one. Do you want to play something?" And so after a couple of actually like meeting each other and then playing one, then I just wrote the song.
Yeah.
It's just my philosophy about You know, it's my relationship to art in general. I don't really, fuck you, I don't need validation. I'm lying, I really, really need validation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that resonates with us as well.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
I don't need you to tell me I'm great. Tell me I'm great. Please tell me I'm great.
Plus, like, I didn't have to buy a microcorg. Also because I didn't have any money at the time. I still kind of don't, but, like, yeah. So it was a cheaper option to get somebody in the band who could play, who owned one.
Yeah.
And then it turned out that he could, like, really play it.
Yeah. I think ultimately at the time, that song was probably more a subconscious message to Matt and Jen.
Yeah.
It's like my audition tape being like, let me in your band.
Yeah. And you can sing, too.
Yeah.
I knew.
So it was a win-win-win all around.
It all worked out.
And kind of jumping off of that, starting from the very beginning, how did Plus Guests come together? Do you all have a history of playing in different bands beforehand?
I've been playing in bands since I was in high school, and I'm 33 now, but I've played in bands for quite a while. I played in some terrible bands, as you usually do in your youth, and but it was only in the past like 5 years that I really started like making good music, I guess. Like, I really started writing, like, good songs.
And even then, it's like...
Yeah. I mean, it's a constant process. I mean, but, like, yeah. So I played in bands in high school, and I'm pretty sure, Eric, you probably played, like, in bands, too, right?
Yeah, I went to West Van Secondary, so they were, like, the rich and fabulous enough to have a rock band class.
Yeah.
And that was, you can fill a credit by going and singing some... poor versions of The Police, and
so it was like karaoke class.
Oh, pretty much, but it, like they had like actual like guitarist kids that like they knew how to play guitar, or drum, or bass. Mm-hmm. But it was like all different levels of capability, and everyone had to be included. And it resulted in some pretty hilarious versions of songs. Like I think I sang Killing Floor, which is like an old blues standard. And it was just like the whitest sounding. Awful, terrible version of that song.
Yeah.
Just terrible. Yeah. Then, since then, I kind of, like, got hooked into them and started a band of my own, and then that band died, and then I started another band of my own, and then this one carries on, and that one is still existing.
And Jen, you had a band in high school.
I took piano lessons when I was a kid, and I went to high school for the performing arts in Ontario, and we were in a band that we practiced once in my friend's basement, and then I went to nursing school and became a nurse, and I was 15 years into my nursing career, and I had gotten my visual art degree actually as well, and then I mastered knitting, and then I decided I should take up the drums, and I started playing drums about 4.5 years ago, and the band started about 4.5 years ago, so that's sort of where that started for me.
I guess this is kind of a question directed to each of you. What inspired you to pick up an instrument? I mean, Jen, you kind of partially answered that with drums, but I'll ask Matt and...
Guitar. I mean, I guess, like, I mean, I hated sports, and I hated, like, gym class, and I just knew that I wasn't gonna do anything like that, and so I feel like I've always liked music. And so when I found the guitar, I think I started playing when I was 13 or 14, and then I just started trying to master all my I liked like 60s bands like Cream and stuff like that, and so I was like learning a lot of like dad rock riffs and just like some Ted Nugent and some Cream and stuff like that, and then like around then I started like a lot of my friends were playing in bands too, so they were learning instruments at the same time. So we decided to be terrible and just suck together, form bands. I had a band called The Unpeople that we cleverly named ourselves after George Orwell's 1984 novel. And that was
such a deep reference.
Yeah, my first really really terrible band. That's where I started singing too, because like nobody wanted to sing, and so I was terrible. Eventually I got good, I think just this last year.
Eventually
I got good at singing. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I had like, I'm a singer by training, I guess, and by experience, but I've always, like, when you're a kid, you grow up learning to play the piano, so I learned to play the piano. And I always wanted to be in a band, but was never brave enough to ask someone to play the songs that I wrote or to do anything like that. And then when I was in university, there's a big old hippie house where they had a basement full of instruments, and one of them was a microcorg, and I'm like, this box is beautiful, and I want to play with it all the time. And so I'd got it, and then I conveniently met Matt. So it's interesting how, like I definitely learned how to play this instrument around the time that this band started happening, in the same way that Jen started learning her instrument the same way this band started happening.
What he failed to mention is that he's, like, already incredibly talented at the piano, so it's not like he was learning to play.
This is not an interview about complimenting Eric. Just because we started with a song about external validation doesn't mean that that needs to be the tenor of this entire interview.
I think
you have a wonderful mustache.
Thank you. God, I work so hard at it.
It's a mustache for radio.
Here, let me see if I can rub it onto the microphone. You can experience it.
3D.
It sounds very fancy.
It sounds so fancy.
So, Matt, you play a bass guitar, and you mentioned that's really a baritone guitar. What's funny is when I was looking at that, I thought you had the two-string bass contraption that the guy from President of the United States of America had.
Well, that's, I kind of lifted the name from there. But yeah, the bass guitar is the proper term for that instrument. And yeah, I was actually, that's one band I was hugely into when I was a teenager. Still kind of am, actually, into the Presidents.
We write songs about cats and...
Yeah, we write songs about space and cats and all,
and things,
all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I've called it a baritar, I've called it, I don't know, like, it's just easier to explain it that way than to say, oh, I play a baritone guitar, and then what's that? Because nobody plays one, so.
I mean, you could say, oh, you heard of Sleater-Kinney? There isn't any bass on those records.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they tune real low.
Yeah.
And they're a great band, too. Mm. Yeah. Great, great musicians.
I love Corinne.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's great. So what bands and artists inspire you all personally and contribute to inspire music? Four plus guests, like, what bands are you like, we want to sound like this and this and this and let's go?
Well, I think we all have very different tastes in music, but I mean, we also like a lot of the same bands together, so I think that kind of we're big fans of They Might Be Giants.
Yeah, it was kind of the...
I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
That was also the... Presidents. I hear Presidents.
Presidents. Ah. That's one of mine. I'm a huge metalhead, but like it never really like enters into our music a lot, other than like the super low tuned stuff. But like, I don't know. It's just I don't know. I get inspiration from a lot of different music. And sorry, what was the question?
just bands you're all into and influences. Yeah.
Okay,
and stuff like that.
Yeah. If I had to pick towards our band, I guess it would be like, I don't know. I like Sebado a lot, and that's definitely when I hear some Sebado in our music, because a lot of it's home recorded as well. So yeah.
I'm very, very, very kind of fond of Riot Grrrl music. I think just all I want to be is in a Riot Grrrl band, which I like can never truly be in, but like I can try to like make the aesthetic happen for myself. So like Sleater-Kinney actually is a one that I really, really, really love. But yeah, there's like a weird, especially like currently, there's a weird sort of revival of a '90s sound happening in alternative rock music, because the counterwave to everything being electronic and dancey is everyone to just jump back to the 90s and being angsty. There's a lot of awesome women that are like fronting that. Like I love Bully, especially, who's coming to town eventually, and I'm seeing them. That's gonna be a really great cathartic show. Yeah, and then a lot of bands off of Side One Dummy Records out of California. So like Jeff Rosenstock is one of my favorites, and yeah.
I like a lot of R.E.M. too. A lot of really early R.E.M.
Really,
that's something me
really
and Jen share a lot.
Yeah. I think for me, R.E.M. is probably a like hidden influence, or maybe not so hidden, but also I mean, I grew up with the Beatles, listening to the Beatles with my family, and but I think for me, a lot it's really Canadian music has been really important to me, like Sloan and the Tragically Hip and Sam Roberts Band. And so I think for me, for my songs, I think that's where I pull a lot of, I'm allowed to say, steal things from.
Influences.
Very influences. She's the source of our kids.
Sorry, Sam, I love you. If you're listening.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, we are influenced.
Yeah, we didn't steal anything. We don't rob people of material.
I think that, being a, even a tiny part of that Canadian music scene is just... very cool thing, because it's just the influences.
Totally.
She writes a lot of songs about traveling. It's really fun.
My songs are story.
Very, very story based.
A lot of stuff about traveling.
Great. Can we hear a song?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Sunshine?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Song's so nice we recorded it twice.
Yeah. Because the first time was so terrible.
We thought it was great at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Can you hear us okay? I can even play the keyboard a little bit. That should be here.
Sounds like things?
Sounds like things.
Sounds like things. Cool.
It's audible.
All right, cool.
That's all we need.
All right, 1, 2. 1, 2, 3, go. I am a cloud. I am completely made of gray. I blend in with the weariest of days. I float along, all on my own, just doing all the things I do. And then you rise. You are the best part of the day. You are the sunshine, beautiful in every single way. Yeah. I see your lights, can't miss the shining of your rays. When you smile, I begin to evaporate. But I won't go into the sky. Just remain here on the ground, looking up at you, yeah. You are the best part of the day. You are the sunshine, beautiful in every single way. You are the sunshine.
Sunshine,
shine.
Sunshine,
was awesome.
Thank you.
So who wrote that song? What's the song about?
I wrote that one. I'm Matt. I played the guitar. I wrote that one.
That song's called Sunshine.
And I know somebody yelled it out. Like, we played a show recently at Displace.
Oh, yeah, that place.
That place, which is now
Blenheim.
The Blenheim.
Owned by Uwe Boll,
the filmmaker. Anyways.
In Vancouver?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Uwe Boll owns something in Vancouver.
Yeah, he owns that in Bauhaus.
Does he live here too?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
You're gonna hear it first, folks.
I also know that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, for those who don't know, Uwe Boll's fairly infamous for making a number of extremely bad horror and fantasy films in the early 2000s. He hasn't done a lot recently, maybe because people stopped giving him money, but there's some bad stuff like House of the Dead.
Blood Rain. Is just like a beautiful underground classic.
Is it like bad good?
No.
Okay,
no,
it's just bad. Bad. Okay.
It's just bad.
But in terms, yeah. So, anyways, we were playing Uwe Boll aside. We were playing. We played this song at the show, and somebody yelled out. One of our friends yelled out, "Hey, what's this song about?" Because I think they were drunk or something.
Yeah.
And I think I was kind of drunk at the time too, because I said. Oh, I was just some bullshit. I wrote it one day at the aquarium. Yeah. I was working at the aquarium. I had a clipboard, and I had to fill out like what stuff in the stock room that I just fill out for the gift shop. So like stuffies, like snow globes with belugas in them. Rest in peace, belugas, and you know, all that stuff. And so I would write songs on this clipboard. And so I don't know. It was just very kind of just an impressionistic song about sunshine and being a cloud. It sounds really terrible.
It's not romantic.
It sounds really terrible to explain it.
Yeah.
So
it's
just
not about anyone.
Bear with me. It's just a bunch of words that sounded nice in the melody.
Yeah, it's not romantic. It's not about anyone.
Well, the way you explained to me once, it was a love song for the sun from the cloud's point of view.
Okay.
It's not really about a person.
It's not about anything.
It's going to be about anyone in particular.
Yeah, yeah.
And is that song in any of your releases right now? You recorded it twice, but can people find it online?
Yeah, yeah. It's on the first thing we put out, Once Your Love.
Okay, it is on Once Your Love.
Mm. Yeah, it's in the middle of it.
Gotcha.
Stashed in the middle there.
And then we released a single version of it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Great. I wanted to talk about that record a bit. Your first release, Once Your Love, it's a fairly loose-sounding record, in a good way, that you call on your Bandcamp Avant Garage, which is great. Tell us about the writing and recording process for that one.
I mean, that came... Like, a lot of those songs are, like, literally the first songs that this band came up with. Mm. Like...
it's a very random assortment of songs.
Yeah. It's very much like... feels less like a... When we made it, it was more like an effort to see, like, okay, this is a catalog of things we have mm-hmm. written, and kind of to prove it that way. And then we were just kind of surprised by the end result about how cohesive and how functional it all seemed to work as a kind of record in that regard.
Yeah.
But from a writer's point of view, it was very collage-like and just like... All right, this song we've practiced, this song we've rehearsed, this song we practiced, and...
This song we just came up with.
Yeah, it's mostly just, like, kind of... And you can kind of sense that it's fueled by the excitement of discovering that we are, in fact, a band.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
can make art together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't just that one time that we found out that Eric could play the synth and had a synth and came over, and then he came over again and kept yeah. happening, and yeah.
And we just kept writing and writing, and, like, yeah, like, once we got, like, the first sort of two or three songs... We wrote. We kind of like had a blueprint from there. Like Sunshine was an early one. External Validation was an early one. So like once we started going from there, we just were like, all right, well, what else can we write about? Mm-hmm. We can, yeah.
So did we? I can't remember. Did we record the vocals for that one? Did we record those at our apartment, or did we record everything for that
apartment.
Record at the?
We did all the singing in the apartment.
At the
yeah.
apartment.
Yeah. That's. I think most of our recordings. We do our recording, our instruments, kind of live off the floor, mm-hmm. In our studio space, in our rehearsal space, and then just because the acoustics are a little better, we go to Matt's in my apartment and record the vocals there.
Yeah.
So,
it's a more controlled environment.
That's kind of our
isolated,
process.
Yeah, isolated. Gets a little intimacy as well, too. I really like it.
Yeah, squishing together and sharing yeah. a mic. Eric and I doing the oohs on
yeah.
Sunshine.
Yeah. yeah. And, so that's basically, yeah, very... It was very collage-like how it came together, but also came together in a way that really encouraged us to keep going mm-hmm. and just keep, like, making music. It's yeah. like, okay, we don't suck, at least to our ears, yeah. you know?
yeah. And if you say it, you know, the band name and the album title, it's Plus Guess Wants Your Love.
It's like, which works really, for a song
we do
which,
need your
which
love.
Which works for a song like Validation.
Yeah. So, as you mentioned, you have a very hands-on approach with the recording process. Have you encountered, like, some of the challenges as a band when it comes to your very DIY philosophy? Are there some, like, self-imposed limitations there, or is it just kind of, like, what you want to do?
I mean, like, sometimes we've been, like, trying to record, and maybe we've been, like, working for, like, because, you know, we all have jobs and stuff. We've been working really hard, and sometimes maybe the energy's not there, or we're grouchy, or we just, like, can't get, like, the energy together. But, I mean, we've been, like we're all friends, too, so we're all fairly honest with each other. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't ever get, like, heated. You know, we might get sulky, but we never, like, yell at each other.
I'd say the largest complication probably is actually space. It's tough to find an affordable space in order to make a record, and like mm-hmm. even at like just a basic level, if you want to rent out a room, you still got to shuffle. If you want to get like a decent amount of progress made, even for an EP, you still need to shuffle out like over $100 at least mm-hmm. in order to make it happen. So we'd been rehearsing out of a space called Renegade that was torn down originally, then we moved into a new space recently, and just with complications with the moving process and the fact that the new studio of Renegade is a remodeled building. It used to be a dental college, and now they kind of remodeled it into studio space, and they just like sound yeah in a pretty didn't want to get political but like the like just like due to complications of moving, like soundproofing isn't done there, and and like everything is tight and everything kind of bleeds into each other. So it's really hard then geographically in order to find a space where you can just have the comfort and ease to make up and do what you want. You're like very easily can get access to microphones or equipment in order to make mm-hmm. something that sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like most of what Matt works with is not a whole very expensive equipment,
yeah.
but it's just like actually finding a space in a room in order to make that in is probably the hardest part. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. What kind of building on that? What kind of gear are you currently using for live and in the studio?
Yeah, like I have this like little. I think it's a Zoom. It's like a Zoom 24-track recorder. It's like a. It's very portable. It's pretty. It's like as big as Eric's keyboard,
yeah.
Which is pretty small and fits on his lap. And it's like got like 24 tracks that you can record audio on, and like you can plug a whole bunch of mics into it, and like pretty much get like all like the drums and instruments together, and then so that's what I use. We just recently inherited a 4-track cassette recorder as well from one of our friends in the Yukon, so that might be coming up in our future
for our
as
new
well.
Art record
for our new art record. And I play as far as like instruments and stuff, I play like this I think it's an LTD baritone guitar that I found at that really cool Rufus, that music mm-hmm. store,
yeah.
One day, because electric baritone guitars are really hard to find, and if you do find them, they're like $400 or $500
at least.
But we scraped together the cash and we got it, and yeah, I have a bunch of pedals that I like to play with, some distortion, some chorus pedals. I have a cool looping pedal that I got recently that might factor into our later works. That's what I play, and I have like a Marshall amp that I just got as well that I'm really digging. Yeah, that's what I play.
What about drums?
My drumsticks are pink. That's what I play. Pink drumsticks.
I think we have a Tama kit.
Tama kit. It's a secondhand kit. It's
Frankenstein.
And we also have three between us, our collective, our studio collective. We've got three kits, and yep. we Eric mostly cobbled together a Franken kit. So I play a Franken kit, which is
parts
I think
of a Ludwig.
A jazz. The kick drum is from a jazz kit, and
yeah. No, one of the toms is from a jazz Ludwig kit, and then one of the bass drum is off of like a Pearl Rock kit. It's like it's big old Franken kit all over the place. But it was really fun to work with that because then we got to think about in terms of our songwriting what pieces of the drums we like the most and what we like best. Mm-hmm. So like the tom, for instance, the floor tom of that sounds excellent because it's just so deep and billowy, and you can hear that really excellently on Dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah.
And but as like the snare itself, like we kind of finesse and change around depending on which song we want to use it, so we can kind of customize and optimize it. Shut up, you.
Was that the sensor? That's did we say something untoward?
And that's what you play.
That's what I play.
Yeah.
And I play a microcork. That's about the extent of it. And the vocal cords.
Yeah. We all sing and write and stuff.
Vocal folds.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got a degree in this. I should know what to properly call them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does the songwriting process entail for you guys? I understand that everyone kind of contributes their own stuff. Anything that you encounter that, like, presents itself as a unique challenge or something that really stands out as kind of singular to what you guys are doing as a group?
Well, I mean, I know it's pretty democratic. Like we call our sort of process the Threeocracy. Mm-hmm. So like if one of us is feeling like kind of meh about an idea, then we'll tend to not really go after it or give it the attention that it deserves, something that we all three agree on. Like I think we all collectively bring in ideas, but then I used to think of it as like, you know, whoever brings it in, it's like their song, but then we all tend to sort of jump on it, and it becomes like a three-headed organism.
Yeah, yeah. We'll bring like lyrics that we've written, or oh, I started this melody, and this is what I'm working with so far, and what do you think? And especially with my last couple of songs, the boys have helped me a lot with like fleshing out the bridges, and cause history of myself, I'm not really a songwriter, and it's very, very new for me. So, it is very much we each have our songs that are very much our songs, but it's also this sort of threeocracy where we all contribute something to each song, even though one of us probably wrote most of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And in terms of challenges, I think it's like, and an aspect of it is like the fact that, like as you mentioned earlier, Jen and I like kind of learned the instruments that we're playing or their details as we started the band. So the songwriting improves with our own skills and kind of like what we're accessible to and what we can do. And it's really interesting because like out of the songs that like came like kind of out of weirdly and naturally, most of those are like my favorite in terms of the arrangements and the ones that like kind of stick with me the most.
Yeah.
Like the ones that seemingly come out of this like very basic simplistic idea that we all develop together, those tend to turn into the ones that I hold on to the most.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like when it just comes together with no effort, seemingly no effort at all, that's like when you know it works, I think. If only lightning struck like more often like that. But sometimes it is a lot of work. Sometimes it is like week to week, like, all right, let's play this again and like chop this thing down. Mm. It's like I find a lot of my songs tend to be really, really short, and so they always tend to pressure me to write like another verse or another chorus. Mm. And I'm just like, no. But then I do. And then it's like, okay, I see what you guys meant.
I've had moments where like when I was writing Lifeline, I think I started it on my iPad, and then I wrote another verse on my phone, and then I had to kind of stitch them together. So I very much like put, this is my life, it's like a pile for everything and everything in its pile, so I have little bits of things sort of all over all over the house. That's a metaphor for my life and how I write my songs as well. So get a little bit from the notebook, a little bit from the iPad, a little bit from the phone, and then stitch them all together. And
yeah that's how it kind of rolls. Yeah.
One thing that we were talking about a little earlier was, you know, it's expensive to find even just places to jam and record on your own, and, you know, studio time itself through a big studio is super expensive. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give someone who's taking the DIY recording route? Like, stuff to keep in mind.
I mean, I definitely, you know, like, the internet is a great resource for, like learning about how to properly like stick a microphone onto like a drum, or how to, or like stick a microphone in front of an acoustic guitar. Like a lot of it is like looking up the information on how to do it, but then once you start doing it and listening to it and just like making mistakes, and some of those mistakes are pretty cool. So like, so as far as advice, I'd say like, you know, there's a lot of books like from the library that you can check out as well. Like the library is a great resource for like home recording stuff if you know where to look. The internet's a great resource of learning. Looking up like articles from old recording magazines, and then just like getting a little recorder or like something that's like fairly easy to use, or something like a computer program, and just like push and record, seeing what happens, you know, and then layering it up and getting into that sort of. That's where like the fun is getting to the layering and hearing it in headphones and like, oh, what will it sound like if it's over in the left ear, you know?
Yeah.
Or the right ear. Like it's, yeah, that's where my advice is, just amass a bunch of information, but also experiment. Mm. Yeah.
And can I just add to that? I think one of the reasons that this process works so well for us is because we are such a cohesive, like we're a team. And we function as a team, so we go into the recording process, each of us knowing what we want individually, but also we kind of, I think we are in each other's heads a little bit and know as a group what our sort of aesthetic is and what our goal is. And so I think my advice would be, like, for other groups getting together and doing it by themselves, is you need to be able to direct yourselves, because you don't have someone, you know, on the other side of a glass, you know, giving you pointers and saying, okay, let's do this. And you have to, you kind of have to have a good idea of what the process is and what it's going to look like. And, you know, going into recording my first time was, I'd never done it before, and it was this foreign thing that you guys had to sort of walk me through. And now, we're a lot better at it. And, you know, we have a process where we, you know, when we record the music and then we do our vocals and then we sort of come together at another time and have like a little listening party where we've let it, you know, settle for a bit and we come back to it. And I think those things are important pieces of the process that when you're doing it DIY, you have the luxury of doing it that way, as opposed to going into a studio at 1 a.m. and being there for the next 4 hours and having to finish the whole thing. So I think we really do have a good thing in that, that we can do it a little bit differently.
And like take breaks when needed and not have to worry about the clock.
Like you're your own boss, so like you can work as hard as or as little as you need to, you know. And the work will basically depend on how, really just how passionate you are about it and how good you want it to turn out. Yeah.
Great. We'd love to hear another song from you guys.
All right.
So what's this next one? Tell us what it's about.
Functionally?
Let's do Functionally.
Cool, yeah. So this is Functionally Irresponsible. This is off of our 2016 EP.
Yeah.
What will they say about us when we find our bones? it's a song I wrote actually in university. Went to a university in a small town that was full of some overly cool people that I was just not a part of. And I like just wanted to be a part of like the cool people, but also was like not able to be part of the cool people. And so I wrote this song about how I want to be with them, but also I really don't like them. But also I really want to be them.
It's complex.
It's very complex, deep and layered.
Yeah. So let's let's play it.
All right, let's play
a song. 1, 2, 3, rock.
I got stuck in the old world, running with my head chopped off. Could you explain it to me, or would you rather not? With a cigarette to light, skinny fit jeans on a Saturday night, every bright side's a function through your teeth. Maybe I'm just new to this, maybe I'm just dumb. Maybe there's a cheat to this that I have not run. My buttons just don't click for you, my glue just don't stick for you. Still I go on about no one else but you. You're everything I wanna be, 'cause you're so cool. Ow! Much cut up in your flannel, boy, don't it itch so bad? Radio has cried for wolf and that makes cover me like a constable, partially irresponsible. So I go on about no one else but you. 'Cause you're so cool, you're so cool. You're everything I wanna be, 'cause you're so cool.
Was great.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
So that one, Functionally Irresponsible, is off of your second EP, What Will They Say About Us When They Find Our Bones? I noticed on your Bandcamp that there's a write-up that describes 2016 as kind of a tough year for the band. Did the challenges you face inform how you approached this release?
Probably. Like, I think the challenges were that, like there was a lot of work involved. Like, I'd just gotten out of school and was finding my feet in my workplace.
And David Bowie died.
David Bowie died.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, that was a hard way to start that year.
Yeah, there was, I don't know, it was just, like, I mean, it was a bummer of a year. Like, this past year was a bummer as well. So it's just, like, yeah, I mean... You know, when that happens,
it took us a long time to make this record.
Yeah, that was the main thing. It was that it took a long time to make it. It took a long time to mix it. There was a lot of time where I didn't have, and there was a lot of time where I was like kind of depleted and still had to work on it. Wasn't terribly focused on it, but I knew I was like, I got to get this done to put it out there. I mean, it was a constant sort of, I almost kind of didn't want to finish it because it was keeping me going through the tough times as well. So, like, so I would almost make excuses to, like, do another mix of this song or, you know.
You can really register in the layering how much effort Matt put into it. And I know for me at that time, I was working a office job, which I was not a very big fan of.
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot of any music making that I did was very much all catharsis and all kind of getting myself out of that mentality and very much a stress reliever. So you can really register, I think, with the attention to like kind of smaller details in songwriting and the fact that we only had to focus on five songs as opposed to a whole bunch of them and hope that they sound good, is that we really thought through what we wanted to include into this, what would make it a little bit of details that would make it interesting. And then you can kind of sense, for at least for me, listening back to it, it's like really, really a cathartic record to listen to. Kind of register how much like the excitement of making this music in comparison to everything else that was going on.
Yeah. And I think that the excitement was, I mean, a product of the music and our just collaboration as songwriters and musicians as well. But just the fact that our time was so precious, and it was so difficult for us to get together at those really random times.
To
do the practicing and do the recordings and then do the vocals. The vocals were probably recorded, am I right in saying 6 months after the
at least.
It took forever.
So the time was really precious, and I think we gave it our all and we did our best, and I am really proud of this record and the work that we did on it.
I remember playing it, like I remember we like got together to in our apartment to have like a full on listen to the whole thing front to back. And I remember being like we were so happy. Like, we were so happy to hear it. Like, everything was just, like, in its proper place sonically. Mm-hmm. It unfolded just, like, wonderfully. I don't think they even really knew what to expect, because I had, I had literally, like, dived into it, and it became this full-on psychedelic EP.
Yeah, and that also added some embellishments that we didn't even really know about, some little Easter egg surprises. So in between the songs, there's some transition
weird ambient pieces and ambient
noises, and you can hear the bus lady saying, waterfront station, or whatever. And it just really contributes to the overall feeling of this journey that we were on over that extended chunk of time to make that record.
I definitely suffer from like saboteur syndrome and a lot of like hating the sound of my own voice and listening to recordings of my own material. And it was like, I think probably one of, if like not the only like standout like records or piece of art that I've participated in and made. I'm just like, fuck yeah, that's okay. That's all right. That is not half bad. Good on you. Good on you, kids.
That really makes me feel good to hear you say that.
That's what I'm here for.
Now, did you mix and master the record yourself as well?
Yeah, I do all like all the mixing and stuff like that. Like, I think in the future, like it's been a very solitary process, but mostly because like
necessity.
Yeah, I assumed that like these guys wouldn't want to sit around a computer and listen to me like, hey, what about this? Hey, what about this? Hey, what about this?
Well, it's hard to feel like you can, like, without like making the process so much longer.
Yeah. So I do as much as I can, and I play it for them, and if there's something that's, you know, sucks or whatever, then I'll figure out a way to, you know, circumvent it and whatever, or do something like, Yeah, like we are, like, that's where the Threeocracy comes back, is that, like, yeah, I do a lot of the mixing myself, but I, you know, I do seek their involvement in the final, like, they do have the final say, you know, after I do, like, a week of work, and they, like, oh, I don't like it. I'm like, okay,
every
well,
time.
Okay,
that's what we say
back to the drawing board. And but then it's better, you know, then it's better, so I can't argue with the results, yeah.
Definitely. What I noticed just listening to the two EPs back to back was there seems to be a progression in many respects between the two when it comes to production and songwriting. Was there a real drive to improve as a band?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a constant. You know, I think for like any band, really, like you shouldn't aim for getting worse. You know,
yeah. You don't want to be worse.
You shouldn't aim for. I mean, we are a bit self-deprecating in that we have called ourselves like Vancouver's
laziest band,
or
Vancouver's best shittiest band. I still love that title the most.
But we like, you know, like because of our work schedules, maybe we can't play as many shows as we want to, or practice as much as we want to. But we do aim constantly, whether we're recording or practicing, writing anything, to always make it as the best thing that we possibly can.
Yeah,
and I think any good band, any at least halfway decent band, like must operate that way. Like they have to, because like you can't aim to get worse or aim to be a consistently mediocre,
yeah,
or do the same thing over and over, unless you're like good at doing that same thing over and over, like AC/DC or something like that. It's great.
But even then, AC/DC had to get really good at playing the same thing.
Yeah,
over and over.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a totally different intent behind the project.
Yeah.
I think for us it's very much a process of like we still like we play a lot of songs that we've written 4 years ago, but I think especially now we're kind of in a stage where we've kind of gotten out of a weird slump where we weren't seeing each other very often, and now we're kind of very focused on consistent rehearsal and finding more opportunities. And you can see that even like minimally, the songs that are still years and years old get like little touches and little tweaks in their performance that improve them vastly.
Yeah, and we still like
more details.
And we still like playing them.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, most of them I hate your songs.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously, when you're going through the recording process, not losing perspective on the songs and the direction of the what you're putting out can be a big challenge. When you're, you know, really going through the minutia of it all, how did you overcome that?
I don't know. I love the minutia. You know, yeah, I love
that's how we overcame it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. You're right. It is very easy to, like, when you really get into it, and it's in your headphones, and you're cranking it. Like, you can totally get lost in it.
Yeah.
And
but I think that's when you would like. You would bring it back to us and say, I'm not sure if I need to do this. I'm really worried about this. And
yeah,
you would listen to it and say, no, it sounds great. Or,
yeah
you're right, it's crap. And yeah, you need to put it in the bin.
In the bin.
But,
yeah,
I think that to reuse the word, Threeocracy again, I think that really helps us not get bogged down in the minutia of the, oh, is this right? Is it really right? And
yeah.
Like, something that I learned on my own in art school was actually I used to use the word when I was working on a painting I was focused on this word called done, and and you get really trapped in your own head trying to make sure that something is finished and done, and it's got this sense of finality and perfect. And I moved in my final semester to using the term ready, and that changed things a lot for me. And so I use that in my songwriting as well, as you know, when we play something live, like Eric said, it might change, but it's, you know, it's kind of good enough for now. And if we, and it's not that we're like settling or we're just going for mediocre, but I think that you know being ready in the moment keeps you from getting bogged down with those little things that could sidetrack you or derail you,
and it prevents the song from being like this jewel encased in amber that is just, it's done and nothing, you can't actually do anything more to it, you know, like why should it be done, like why can't I go back and like just yell instead of like screaming, or yell instead of singing, or like just like you know, why can't I put it in a completely different key than they're used to?
Yeah. Like, or why can't we just go back and record Sunshine? Because
why not?
Let's do it.
Yeah, but
then record it.
Yeah, but then there's also like you know, like there is aiming for perfection. And there's also like realizing like what you can do, and like I've been satisfied with stuff that's been like fairly rough sounding, and like when I listen to a lot of our, when I listen to Wines for Love, I hear a lot of stuff that nowadays I could totally like. I could be like, okay, now I know how to do this, you know, whereas before I really didn't know what I was doing that much. And, but I like how it is. Like, I like how it came out, and it's, I wouldn't actually change it. You know, I could, but I'm not, you know. I like how it is.
So, one thing you mentioned, Jen, was, you know, the concept of being ready, being in the moment. Kind of shifting gears a bit, what have your live shows been like? What bands have you liked playing with? How has that been for you guys?
Our stage banter is off the hook.
It is out of the park.
Better than our music.
Our stage banter is lit.
It's the highlight of the shows, really.
Sorry, what was the question again?
We played a lot with Eric's other bands.
Yeah, they're kind of our companion bands.
Yeah, it's like Find a Fam. I'm sticking to the family.
Yeah.
What bands do you play in, Eric?
So, beforehand, I was playing in a band called Car Alarm Party, and we broke up the end of 2016. It was a hard year. And then we recently did a show together with a new band that I'm working with called Fun Park. We had our show, latest show was with them at Displace, actually. Right before Displace became the Blenheim and was owned by Vivol.
One of our finest shows that we played was at the Railway Club. And
that was a great time.
And we played with a Rage Against the Machine cover band.
Yeah.
Calm Like a Bomb?
Yes. Calm Like a Bomb!
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Vancouver's resident. Rage Against the Machine cover band.
They were great.
I danced my butt off.
So ridiculous.
They were great.
What else was on that night?
Marco's band.
Yeah, my friend Marco's band, which I think is disbanded now. I forget what they were called. But I think they're like reforming into a new thing.
Yeah, no, Marco's great. Yeah. I mean, we tend to play a lot of shows with like friends' bands and stuff like that, just because it's like very easy to get that kind of thing together. But yeah, the more shows that we see... You know, I'm putting together sort of dream rosters of like dream lineups of shows, like not necessarily even like indie rock bands. Like there's this electronic artist called Devours that I really like, and it would be a cool thing to have like a, you know, like say us and like him in the middle, and then like another rock band or something like that, and just like really mix it up. So, yeah.
Have you had the chance to tour at all? Or have you largely just played in the city?
Largely played in the city. We've one of our notable road gigs was out in Squamish. We played Squamish.
Yeah. That was cute.
That was a great show.
That was a great time.
Yeah.
It was a great time.
It was part of your... Yeah.
Yeah, I actually worked for a children's hospice, and we had a camp at a youth retreat, and our theme that year was Find Your Voice, and we had a very sort of music-led curriculum for the week, and the ladies that I was planning it with knew that I was in a band, and they asked us to play, and we came up and played a bunch. I worked like a 20-hour day, and at the end of it, I played a set with these guys, and it was lots of fun. Yeah,
it was a great gig, and then you guys, you and your fellow nurses, dressed up as Kiss,
and they played an Air Kiss band. Yes. It was so great.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Let's hear another song before we get to our final batch of questions.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I don't know, let's see.
Do you want to do Monorail?
Sure.
Want to try Monorail?
Yeah.
Yeah, Abandoned Monorail.
Abandoned Monorail.
We'll do.
Yeah, yeah.
Tambourine for this. I'll try not to hit you in the knee.
There we go.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Charge.
Ready?
Yeah.
A long time ago at the zoo, before I was born, I think, there used to be a monorail that went around the whole zoo. Now the trains are all gone, but the track's still there. There was an accident, I think somebody died. Abandoned monorail,
monorail.
Abandoned monorail.
these kids went through vents. One of them got mauled by wolves. I saw it on a talk show.
Fantastic as always. That was Abandoned Monorail off of PlusGuest's latest EP. It's a very long name, but it's about finding bones.
What will they say about
what
us?
What will they say about us?
When they
Thank
find
you.
Our bones.
So one of the things I noticed looking at your Facebook page is you make a point of mentioning that you rocked Megan's birthday party in Fish Pond on there. So something obviously significant happened. What went down at Megan's birthday party?
That was our first gig.
It was our very first gig.
So we got invited to play because, I don't even know how that came about. She just needed like a band or...
I think she just liked...
One
of my art school friends was turning 25, which was a big deal. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago for me, so I don't remember if I made a big deal about it. But
about
turning 25. But Megan was a fan of our band, and she asked us to play at her birthday party. So that was our first gig on the lawn in Shaughnessy. There's a lot of looking around.
Sorry, we just got people reaching into the studio just to grab stuff.
There's some activity happening here. Yeah, I remember I got a lot of electric shocks because it was kind of a damp evening.
Oh boy.
We were playing on a tarp. We had a tarp on the lawn, and we had all our instruments set up on the tarp and our mics and an extension cord going across the lawn, and there was a little bit of shocking going on with the microphones. And
we jury-rigged a little PA system together out of like a small mixer and a bass amplifier, and I remember my red cup was full of booze, and it was a good show.
Yeah, I think we introduced the show by saying, "Hi, we're PlusGuest, and we're going to play until the cops show up," and they didn't.
They didn't.
We played for we only knew like 6 or 7 songs at that point, so we played half an hour of material.
Yeah, we played really, really full of things because we needed full time.
Yeah.
That stupid song.
Yeah.
Was it in Carisdale?
Yeah,
Carisdale.
I guess it was Carisdale. I don't know.
Carisdale. It was like a really she part of town. And we were like, you could see the neighbors clutching their pearls.
Oh, how dreadful. But we terrible. Rocked. Like, we rocked. Like, it was a good first gig.
It was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, it was a very homemade gig, you know, so it was very...
Supremely homemade.
Yeah.
Have you played any shows kind of similar to that experience, or has that been your only, like, one-off, like, DIY show, DIY band, or has it been just, like,
I've offered
venues?
I've offered to play on James and Fiona's lawn
a lot. we did an impromptu show with the, an impromptu acoustic show with the pianos that they place around the city.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a couple years ago, when they were doing that, we just stopped by one of them and just turned a microcorg into a full piano, which
down on the C-ball
worked. Yeah. And then we just played it on the C-ball, and we had a couple people watch. That was really fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's photos of that on the Facebook.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, that was a good gig.
Yeah. One thing that's crossed my field of vision is that Eric also plays in a band called Fun Park. Eric, have you had any difficulty juggling the two bands?
Juggling two bands, the only actually time that it's been difficult has been when we're playing a show together and getting no relief in between.
No
band to play in between us. That was the only time it was really difficult. It's actually kind of like a fun game to like to write songs and then kind of determine or think about which group it would kind of work or flow best with. And I mean, like, it gets a little bit, like, can get a little bit stuck into my own head and overthink things. But I think a lot about, like, functionally, when I first wrote it, I was like, oh, where does this belong? Who does this go to? And like, I think, like, kind of, like, just kind of in the back of my head, like, oh, what would it be like if it was arranged with another band? That's less a complication and probably more just, like, a kind of a small little offhand joy where you can kind of think about options.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I definitely don't feel like I have creative limits by working in two bands. I think there's some commitment level, like just conversations you have to have where it's like, which one are you going to like hugely prioritize over the others? And, but like that's never caused issues within either group. And there's never been a moment where it's like, why aren't you playing more with us? Or why aren't you doing more with us? It helps that, like, they're also friends with all the members of Fun Park. And
all friends.
Yeah,
so, like,
we tell them to fuck off when they need to.
Yeah. Also helps that we're really lazy, so we just don't practice
Fair enough. So what does PlusCast have planned for the rest of 2018?
We're presently in a really cool, like, one of my the stage that I most enjoy being in a band is like practicing and figuring out new songs and like writing stuff. And so like the past few practices we've been either like coming up with new material or I'll throw down an idea, and then all of a sudden by the like 20 minutes later we have a finished song. That's sort of how where our skill level's at right now, is we can just like get an idea out of the ether and just make something new. So I would have to say just like writing material, massing it. I would love to record a thing this year, because it's been a couple of years since the last one. We're planning to move into a new space called the Jamnasium, which is Asuna Studios, I believe. A good friend of ours is involved with them, and so we're going to move into a new space and hopefully fill that space up with our new music.
Nice. Do you have any shows coming up in the next few months?
Not right now, because I think that's... I mean... Like, when you're in sort of the writing mode, like, playing a show kind of, like, just dips lower down your priorities, I guess. I mean, not that it's... Yeah, and plus we're all, like... I just worked 7 night shifts this past week, so...
Oh, boy. Oh boy.
So I've been getting my work all sorted out, and we've been kind of...
Yeah, that's been in a transition with his... I want to call it the day job, but it's the night job.
It's the night job.
It's difficult to juggle with him working...
Job. I'm working tonight.
And so I think like the main focus right now is getting through the transition to a new space, make that work, and then as soon as we find a little bit of a settlement there, then probably just amp up the amount of performing that we're doing as the year goes on, and then hopefully that'll come together for the end of the year where we'll be able to record something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we do enjoy playing shows, you know, but. You know, my favorite part is just when we're practicing, when we're all three of us are in the room and just working on stuff. When it's just us. I don't know.
He's selfish and introverted that way.
But I like playing.
None of us are selfish or introverted.
There's a thrill that you get playing in front of people. That's like nothing like it. For sure.
It's a challenge that I enjoy. I've come to enjoy that. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great stuff. So how can people follow you and listen to your music?
We got the plusguests.bandcamp.com. That's like our primary source for music. We've been trying to get better at updating our little social media empire.
We have an Instagram, so we're at plusguestsvancouver, all one word, no underscores or anything. And we have a Facebook page, so we're the plus guests that doesn't have as many likes as the plus guest from France, I believe.
Yeah.
Look for the plus guests.
They have more.
We're humble.
We're super humble pie.
Yeah. So yeah, that's probably the best way to like get a hold of us or like tell us like, hey, you guys are cool, or hey, you guys, you know, need to like practice more or whatever. Yeah.
Awesome. So we're approaching the end of the program, but we have time for one more song from you guys.
Okay. What would you like to do?
I'm leaning towards Night Bikers, but I'm also, yeah, maybe Night Bikers would be all right.
Night Bikers? Do you need a tune or anything for that?
Just did.
That's the thing. Matt is like the understated talent of the band.
So what's Night Bikers about?
It's like another one of those impressionistic little songs. I like, it's weird where the like the little kind of bits come from, but you just see like, I was out in front of my apartment, and our apartment is on 10th Avenue, so like that's where the like that's like a bike route, and so you always see bikers, and so I maybe I was in some sort of weird open to the universe kind of mood or whatever, but like I saw these, it was kind of late at night, and I saw these two bikers kind of rolling by. It may have been like 12, 1 in the morning.
I think it was 1:55 a.m.
It was 1:55 a.m. as in the lyrics. And so that's why there's lyrics. And I think I needed to document this kind of, I made up this little story in my mind, I guess, about just biking at night. City's all yours, it's just you two. And it's just something very, I don't know, kind of special and intimate about that. You don't get that during the day, you know? It's like there's a lot of stuff that happens at night. You know, this is going to sound so stupid. there's a lot of stuff that happens at night that doesn't happen during the day.
Owls.
It's dark.
Owls.
Yeah.
Night shift workers. Raves. Raves don't happen during the day. Unless they are like a 24-hour thing.
Yeah.
That's what night...
Romance happens.
Romance happens for sure.
Happens at night. Matt doesn't want any of his songs to have romance in them.
They're just... It's just a bunch of stuff that happened.
No one has feelings.
It's just some bullshit I wrote.
Some bullshit I wrote. No one has feelings.
So this is called Night Bikers, and this is our last song, and I would like to thank you guys for having us on the show today.
Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that we could be reliable, too, and show up early.
I really appreciate that.
Show up early and not in the middle of the show. So.
Yes.
All right. It's 1:55 a.m. And I can't see anyone outside. Come on now, 'cause I'm not gonna sleep tonight. Right beside me and talk about riding at nights, their words fill the air. Night bikers riding at night, city is all theirs.
Fantastic. Thank you again. That was so great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
So that was Night Bikers by Plus Guests. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram and check out the records on Bandcamp. Thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed this week's episode, let us know. You can find Pacific Sound Radio on...
You can find us on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, Instagram, at Pacific Sound Radio, Twitter, Pacific S Radio. You can always listen to the live show on Save On Radio every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m., YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, and our website, PacificSoundRadio.com, all great options.
And our next episode will be next Sunday, February 18th from 4 to 6 p.m. only on Save On Radio, featuring Small Town Artillery frontman and the Boom Booms guitarist Tom Van Deruzen. I'm James.
I'm Travis.
And this has been Pacific Sound Radio. Good night.